This is the Made of Clay Report. I'm your host, Eric Clay, and our guest on this episode is Raymond Matrulis. Raymond, it's good to have you here.
Okay, and my professional name is DJ Duce.
DJ Duce, okay. So DJ Duce, or Raymond. The way the show begins is with a huge question. Who are you? How can we start this conversation? Who are you?
Well, I kind of wanted to wing it, and I wanted you to ask me questions,
and I
read some of the questions, but they were kind of like the things I prefer not to think about. So I'm still going to wing it, but I at least thought what I would say. It's a legitimate question to ask me who I am. So I'm a poet first and a party and club DJ second. A flower delivery driver in Manhattan third, and a father, ex-husband, and poet's good enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Let's take it from there.
In your poet self, in your DJ self, in your flower deliverer self.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you. Is there anything you want to know?
What for you makes those activities, those list of roles that you made, what qualities make them valuable to you? What quality of life do you value the most and aspire to share with others?
Well, I thought about this maybe 10 years ago, and when I was getting on, and I realized that, you know, I have my son, so... And my daughter, so that's good enough. That's worth. It's given my life value.
Right, right, and the first time this show will air, it may air more than once, but the first time this show will air is on August the 15th of 2021, and that is the day I understand that you turn 72.
Yeah, it's my 72nd birthday, and I just found out it's Lithuanian Day in eastern Pennsylvania, where my father is from. My grandfather was a coal miner, and I'm a big birthday horoscope from the Daily Papers fan, and generally that was my gift for people on their birthday, and if it was, I'd buy the Daily Papers. And if it was Sunday, it was like expensive. It was like $10. But right. I got a birthday horoscope about 5 years ago here in Ithaca, and it said to use my talent for the ridiculous over the coming year, which I've followed that advice. It's also the birthday of Napoleon. It's the birthday of Lawrence of Arabia. It's the birthday of Julia Child. It's the birthday of Thomas De Quincey. He wrote the hashish papers. I once found a whole rack of birthday cards where they had one card for each day of the year with all the people born on that day. Yeah, that was genius. I was in the library making a delivery once, and we were doing a lot of work there, a private club. They just were really understanding, and I drove and carried stuff around. But then when the people started focusing, they would let me wander around. So they had a library, and they had this thin book I found that was I guess the early 20th century. It had last words. It had people's last words.
Sure.
It had like 40 people on each page.
Their last words.
Listed down. Yeah. Oh, it was very, very cool. God, I wanted that book, but I didn't take it. We also did a wedding at some country club, and they had like a library that was just for show. And one of the books was the that classic series or something, but it was Davy Crockett's autobiography or something. I wanted that book too. I remember those books, but I've had to get rid of a lot of my library. I only have like 3 shelves now. But during the pandemic, I actually read a large number of them. Well, my son's name is Ajax, and my daughter's name is Darla May, and they're coming to see me the weekend of my birthday. So when this is broadcast, they will be here.
They will be here.
Anyway, we'll all be huddled around the radio.
So
I'm going to insist that my son see family pictures and my daughter, so that they know who these people are when I'm not around anymore, to describe each book to him. I'm going to like go through my books and say, this book is this and this book is that. Sure. It's going to be really dull, but I don't see them very much at all.
It's something that they're open to going with. It can be a beautiful thing to do, especially when you don't see them often and they want to figure out, who is this man? Who was this man? What I want to do right now is I want to cut to music. What would you like to open the show with musically?
Something really irritating. Here Comes Santa Claus by Gene Autry.
Okay.
Now, the reason I'm playing this song is if I had a gig with an opportunity to play my theme song, this would be it. This is a really good song. And the music, the rhythm section, you can't beat it. Here Comes Santa Claus.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. Vixen and Blixen and all his reindeers pulling on the reins. Bells are ringing, children singing, all is merry and bright. So hang your stockings and say your prayers, cause Santa Claus comes tonight. Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He's got a bag that's filled with toys for boys and girls again. Hear those sleigh bells jingle, jangle, oh, what a beautiful sight. So jump in bed and cover your head, cause Santa Claus comes tonight. Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He doesn't care if you're rich or poor, he loves you just the same. Santa Claus knows we're all God's children, that makes everything right. So fill your hearts with Christmas cheer, cause Santa Claus comes tonight. Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He'll come around when chimes ring out that it's Christmas morn again. Peace on earth will come to all if we just follow the light. So let's give thanks to the Lord above, cause Santa Claus comes tonight. Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. Vixen and Blitzen, all his reindeers pulling on the rein. Bells are ringing, children singing, all is merry and bright. Hang your stockings and say your prayers, cause Santa Claus comes tonight.
This is the Made of Clay Report. I'm your host, Eric Clay, and our guest on this episode is Raymond Matrulis. So Raymond, you said that you are empowered to bring the ridiculous into the world. And in a certain sense, playing Here Comes Santa Claus is a little ridiculous. But what does that mean to you? What do you do? What are you doing? What are some examples of you bringing the ridiculous into the world?
Well, we could start with my being a DJ.
Yep.
First of all, I have equipment that I use it for parties. I was finally able to acquire equipment about 15 years ago, and I have one turntable and one 15-inch PV speaker, because I didn't want to arrive at a party with like 16 suitcases. But then like 3 years after I bought like the stripped down one turntable and one speaker. All you had to do was kind of like show up with a laptop. So that was all like wiped out. But I play vinyl. I play records. And I need a third piece. I need the a cheap mixer so that stereo records will come out of one speaker. But mm-hmm. I still have not conquered that problem. It's adequate.
Right.
It doesn't offend me. No, people don't even notice, actually. And so I'm the house DJ for Ithaca Reuse, and I used to DJ their outdoor parking lot sales.
Uh-huh.
And you could hear the music at Burger King.
That's a powerful
Which,
speaker.
By the way, has gone out of business. Burger King's gone out of business.
Yep.
Here in Ithaca. What were we talking about? Oh, my being a DJ, that's ridiculous. Okay, so I have one turntable. That means that if I play a record, you hear the beginning of the record. And then when it's over, it's quiet.
Yeah.
And then I put the next record on. But I've got it down to like 7 seconds or less. I mean, really. Basically, what I'm driving at is that it's an irritant. And you need an irritant. There needs to be an irritant. Well, I have a couple that more than one, but there has to be at least one. That's a pretty ridiculous idea.
The silence is what gives space for the sound.
Well, I think you can change partners.
Yep, that's true too. And that's not so ridiculous. That's extremely functional. It's amazing how you work this out.
I'm starting to think about things in my life that I want to talk about, but I don't really want to label them as ridiculous yet.
Okay. So what do you want to talk about?
I was born in Manhattan, downtown, and lived there on 61st and 1st until I was 3. And then we moved to Massapequa Park, and we lived on 1st Street in Massapequa Park. And I just found out that Jackie Curtis lived like a block and a half up the street from where I was like 5 years old. And then we moved to Massapequa right on the border of Seaford. Oh, it was very beautiful there. And that's where I grew up until I went to boarding school. I went to Catholic boarding school on the North Shore, the Gold Coast, from the 4th to the 8th grade. What are we talking about? I forgot.
Yeah, about what your life, where you've lived.
Oh, how I got to Manhattan.
Manhattan.
Then I went to Chaminade, the best high school, Catholic high school on Long Island, and got thrown out at the end of my junior year. Because I kind of went wrong when I was like the top student in boarding school. But then when I got to the, you know, I failed French 4 times. I failed Latin 4 times. You know what I'm saying?
So you must have been doing something else.
Yeah, I was reading books. And then I went to college, went to a whole large number of colleges. I got thrown out of Cortland. I got thrown out of Corning. I failed 7 courses my freshman year at Cortland. There I was definitely doing something else. And I got thrown out of Corning for pretty much being in SDS and organizing it there. I haven't forgotten where we're getting to here. Yeah, college. So then I went to Iowa, and I graduated from Iowa like I should, but I wasn't promoted, let us say. And so I moved to New Haven and became a DJ at a club called the Snow Chicken, which was a very interesting place. And I lived there with my two best friends from Iowa City, one a poet and one an artist. The artist I haven't seen in 20 years, and 10 of those years he was a fugitive for marijuana. And the other one is a pretty famous poet now, except he won't talk to me anymore because I still drink and do drugs. And I don't really think that's legitimate. Anyway, then I moved to Manhattan, and ultimately my two best friends moved to Manhattan, and we all lived together in Manhattan for at least a couple of weeks. And I'm telling you, I really enjoyed that, especially New Haven. We tore New Haven up. From 75 to 77. And then, so I'm in Manhattan. My mother got me an apartment on 17th, between 7th and 8th, for I think it was like $600 a month or less. It had a really high ceiling, a studio right at the front door. It was really a very nice place. I lived there for 20 years and delivered flowers mostly for really high-end florists, the most high-end florists in the universe, I decided, which is in all history, which is a thing I thought about driving around, which I could tell that story, how I came to that conclusion.
Well,
but,
I'm wondering how is it that you decided as you were driving around that the estimation of these florists became more celestial as you were driving along?
Well, it's kind of a sad story. Let me finish the other one. Then I moved to Jersey City for 15 years, and I lived in Jersey City and worked in Manhattan delivering flowers. Then I moved to Philadelphia for a month to play records, but that didn't work out, and that's an interesting story. And then I moved to Ithaca 9 years ago. I guess that was a mistake, even though they have a DJ culture here, I have to say that. But dance parties and house parties have been over for years, even before the pandemic.
Oh yeah.
I'm sorry, what'd you say about driving in Manhattan? What did you want to know about that?
I was just curious how the accolades you had given these, or I don't know whether.
Oh, I'll tell you.
Positive,
okay.
Or derogatory.
I worked for a couple of months at a florist in New Haven that serviced Yale. And I lived in New Haven for 3 years, and I knew one Yalie. I lived a block away. It's upscale, okay? So on their recommendation, I got a job at Flowers by Philip on 85th and Madison, and Isabella Rossellini lived upstairs, and Jackie Onassis lived a block away on Fifth Avenue, and she was one of our customers. I knew how to drive, and I was driving for the New Haven florist, so I was from Manhattan. I said, it's all numbers, but blah, blah, blah. So I got out there, and boy, I had it down to a science. I was really good. I loved it. I loved it. Anyway,
What did you love about driving?
Your own man. You're in control. Have effect.
Yep.
All those stupid masculine things. I worked for Flowers by Philip for 8 years, and I worked for Pure Matter Lake on Broadway and Broome in Soho for 5 years, and I worked for VSF, Very Special Flowers, on 10th Street and Bleecker, a block away from where my mother was born and raised, for 16 years. And I worked at a couple of other places, but those didn't work out so well. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I became a poet pretty much at Cortland, where I failed 7 courses. You know, I wrote a poem my first poem when I was 9 and stuff, but I kind of became a poet at Cortland when someone told me that, well, I knew it was good. I just wanted to become a poetry teacher, and I could really do that really well, not only poetry, but teach it. I was really good at it. My father was a high school history teacher with Alec Baldwin's father. My mother was a kindergarten teacher for like 25 years. You couldn't get over on her. I wanted to teach. After a couple of decades, I thought to myself, telling people what's wrong with their poem is not exactly teaching. But even though you make their poem yours, even if you change just one word, it's, you know, you have a claim on it and it's not right. But they learn lessons, and the next time they will have hopefully learned those lessons. But I wasn't politically correct when I graduated from Iowa in 75, and I was not channeled or promoted, and mm-hmm. I resent that. Anyway, up saying, I'm going to do what I like, and I liked to first of all, flowers don't weigh very much. They smell good. They don't tell you what to do. They're beautiful. And I got to drive around Manhattan all day long, smoking pot. It was an adventure. And I still love it.
Yeah. Let's cut to music. What should we play next?
Let's play Can't Judge a Book by Its Cover.
Well, you can't judge a honey bow looking at the bee. Can't judge an apple bow looking at the tree. Can't judge one bow looking at the other. Can't judge a book by looking at the cover. Oh, can't you see? Wow, you misjudged me. I've been acting like a farmer, but I'm a lover. Oh, can't judge a book by looking at the cover. Judge sugar bow, looking at the cake. Can't judge a woman bow, looking at a man. Can't judge a mother bow, looking at the daughter. Can't judge a book bow, looking at the cover. Can't you see? Oh, you misjudge me. I may act like a farmer, but I'm a lover, honey. Can't judge a book bound looking out the cover. Come on.
This is what a song. Oh, I wanted to be a lead guitar player when I was 14 years old, and I thought I'm too old. What a record. John Hammond Jr., who made it, lives in Jersey City. I said I miss Jersey City more than Manhattan. There were 22 fast food places within two blocks of my house. In Jersey City, not like Ithaca. It's not like Ithaca.
So I want to come back to, you know, my the usual question I ask after.
I still didn't tell you. I didn't tell you about the universe, the best florist in the universe.
Go right ahead.
Let me tell you. Let me finish that story. So these florists were. We had the New York Times account. We had the Seagram's account. We had Ralph Lauren. I know Ralph Lauren. I've been in three of his houses, okay, for 16 years, okay? So these were the best florists in the only city in the world ever, right? Manhattan. Okay? Can we agree on that? You have to take my word that these florists were the best florists. You know, we'll have to agree that Manhattan is the best city there ever was, except for maybe Alexandria or something like that.
And but, since it's your story, we don't have to agree. It's just your story. And that's good.
Okay, well, now, since it's 2000 or whatever year it was, since it's the latest time in human evolution, it is the way we do things now are better than we did 100 years ago, which is pretty spurious, but at least the technology is something to say something about. Right. Yeah. Okay. And we don't know if there's any florists or flowers on any other planet. We don't know if there's any other flowers anywhere else in the universe. So I was at the top of my form at the peak of the flower delivery profession in all history, in all universe, every day. Can we kind of agree?
I can see that, and I can very much appreciate it. The only other time of affluence that might have equaled or exceeded that in New York City would have been the time when the Waldorf and the Plaza were founded in the 18 or when they were most active in the late 1800s and early 1900s. And they had.
Yeah, you're right. A close second. A close second.
I want to come back, though. I want to come back to something you had said, because one of the turning points in your life was you went to the Iowa Writers Workshop. Is that
yes.
right? And you graduated yes. from Iowa.
Yes.
But you didn't.
I had a poem in Rolling Stone, like their second year of existence. Mm-hmm. I had a poem in The Nation, who paid me $10. This was like 1971. I dare say that might have been my peak.
And the regret that I hear in your voice, or the sour grapes, or the they done you wrong, was that you didn't get the mentoring, or you didn't get the launch from that program that you were looking for. Why do you think that happened?
I skirted it by saying the positive instead of the negative. Mm-hmm. That the positive is that I'm not politically correct. That's the positive.
But that doesn't anyway, tell me. That doesn't tell me what you are.
No.
And in
no,
1975,
I used to be an SDS. Let's mm-hmm. put it that way.
Sure. Yeah. No. I know.
And now my name is DJ Duce.
Right. And what's the connection between those two?
Well, I've made the crossover. Let me put it this way. When I moved here 9 years ago to Ithaca, after spending 16 vacations here in a row with my son and my sister living here for 50 years, way too long, I heard in the paper, I saw a quote by a woman film professor at Ithaca College who was saying that she had never heard of Pasolini. Let's just put it that way.
And what are you saying?
Eric, let's talk about something else. Sure. Woodstock, 9/11.
But why was going to New Haven with your two buddies in 1975?
I moved there first, and then each of them came. Oh, that's a good story. I went to Silvermine College of Art after I got thrown out of these upstate schools, and that was paradise in New Canaan, Connecticut, a two-year art school. It was just like nirvana. And of course, I didn't realize it while I was there, but I took advantage of it. Anyway, I made fast friends from there, and two of them, a couple, moved to New Haven, and he was the super of a building that was like 100 apartments or something. So that's why I moved there. And then the female part worked at the Snow Chicken. So I got hooked up, which mm-hmm. doesn't happen anymore, which my ex-wife doesn't believe in. getting hooked up, which my son now also does not believe in getting hooked up. Like, it's not Italian, you know? My other half is Italian. This is how everything operates. He went to Bard College and graduated, which is the place that if I had gone there in 67 when I wanted to, I would be more successful now, having gone through a legitimate four-year school without getting thrown out. He calls me in his sophomore year and says, I don't like rich people. I just about turned over. I mean, that's the only reason to go there. Jeez. Anyway,
He's doing really well.
He's doing too well.
But I guess, would you have been able, had you gone there out of high school, would you have been able to have survived it better than any place
else? There would have been recognition there. That's what wasn't at Iowa. That's what did not happen in Iowa.
What would recognition have looked like?
It would have. This is the oddball of oddballs.
In an oddball institution.
This is the person. Yeah. This is the person that the movies from the 40s teach us to listen to. You know what I'm saying?
So you were out of step with your times. How did that person end up in SDS?
What? It was the only way to go. I was a big Paul Goodman guy. Mm-hmm. That's what spoiled me on school. I found out about Paul Goodman, mm-hmm. which nobody will even know who they are, who he is. I gave his book to my ex-wife, who's a teacher now, and I dare say she probably doesn't have it.
Right, and it was kind of a thick classic.
Compulsory Miseducation and the Community of Scholars. That's what I was into. Mm. So I organized on this. I founded the Cortland Free High School in 1968, and after I left there in 68, it lasted for 7 years on my model. And, you know, I hung out with those Cornell people. That was an experience. And I had poems in the Grapevine Press with me and Father Berrigan, the only two poems in the issue, which my friend bought at a yard sale and then saw the, of course, the insert with the poems was not in the issue. Father Berrigan came to my apartment in Jersey City and baptized my son when he was 5 years old. He came to our apartment in Jersey City and baptized him.
Yeah. Was that what he was living on the Upper West Side in Manhattan?
I'm not sure. That was before that.
He was living in a Jesuit
that.
House then, yeah.
So we have a lot of connections.
And
I read one of my poems at the baptism. It's called Hackles. I wrestle with the demon. There's no other way to say it. I am becoming more substantial so as not to be carried away. I thirst for the fight. I trust in strength for my Lord. I look on the field and am desolate until it is filled with my enemies. Thank you for letting me see the day, for time alone and the night to pray. I read that poem. He took me aside afterwards and said, there are no enemies. That's the only thing he really said to me.
And
well, I don't agree. I don't agree.
Well, I can have it both ways, because I know what I think I know what he's talking about, and I think I know what you're talking about. And I really like your poem because it cuts to a quality of resoluteness in the face of circumstances you can't fully control, but that you can contend with. And that is what I think you were saying. Did I hear something of what you meant? Not that that's a good question, but.
I'm sorry. You're asking me?
I'm asking, did I hear something of what you meant? That's not a great question to ask a poet. But
what I meant?
What you described in that poem was the being resolute to face the day and engage what comes. And there are struggles and there are battles and they're not. And a person who doesn't have who doesn't have enemies is a person who is probably lying to you. But you don't have to you don't have to destroy your enemies. The best way is to dance with them or to fight them in a way that pushes understanding forward. But
well,
we all have
that's
enemies.
Not in the poem. I mean, that's in the poem. I mean, it's I don't say to squash them.
No, you're right. You don't say that. And that's where I think it's you don't overstep and you do not glorify destroying anybody. But our enemies are the ones who really have judged us wrong or push us wrong. That says as much about us as it does about them. And only in the struggle with them. And I would call that struggle a very forceful form of love if we're not out to kill each other. But we're only out to move the whole conflict along, then that's a powerful kind of love. And sometimes it edges into violence.
Wow.
And
that's like one of those balancing beams that actress fell down on.
It is not a balance.
Kind of put a board board on the thing and you try and balance on it. Yeah. My
and
God.
The thing is there
that's
is
like
no,
whether let's kill them or not. You know,
it's a let's engage them and we're going to fall off that beam because we're not going to do it well, but we're not out to destroy anybody, but we're just out to do what we think we have to do.
Oh, so you're saying it's preferable to engage.
It's preferable to engage. I would say that Berrigan's statement comes out of a kind of spirituality where one doesn't look at someone as an enemy with whom you have no honorable.
I understood that.
And I know that you understood that, but I'm not sure that our listeners understand that being on both sides of that issue, yes, we definitely have enemies, and no, there are no enemies. Those are both true statements. And when we learn to live well with those two statements, we can.
Wow,
fight.
Very cool.
We can.
Yes,
fight fairly.
Very cool.
And that's a struggle that I feel from the way you read your poem. It's a struggle that you have struggled with.
Yes. My sister yelled at me for stuttering.
There is nothing to worry. Yes.
I really like what you said, Eric.
And I like what
I really
you said.
Like it.
I want to know what music we're going to play next.
I want to hear the sad songs, but let's not play them. Let's play King Pleasure. We'll leave out the two sad ones, unfortunately, and play King Pleasure, please.
Okay.
You got the 1952 version?
I got the 1952 version of King Pleasure. I'm in the mood for love. Here we go.
Oh, yeah.
There I go, there I go, there I go, there I go. Pretty baby, you are the soul who snaps my control. Such a funny thing, but every time you're near me, I never can behave. You give me a smile and then I'm wrapped up in your magic. There's music all around me, crazy music. Music that keeps calling me so very close to you turns me your slave. Come and do with me any little thing you want to. Anything, baby, just let me get next to you. Am I insane or do I really see heaven in your eyes? Bright as stars that shine up above you in the clear blue skies. How I worry about you, just can't live my life without you, baby. Come here and don't have no fear. Oh, is there wonder why I'm really feeling in the mood for love? So tell me why, stop to think about this weather, my dear. This little dream might fade away. There I go talking out of my head again. Oh baby, won't you come and put our two hearts together? that would make me strong and brave. Ooh, when we're one, I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid. If there's a cloud up above us, go on and let it rain. I'm sure our love together will endure a hurricane. Oh, my baby, won't you please let me love you and give a relief from this awful misery?
What is all this talk about loving me? My sweet, I am not afraid, not anymore, not like before. Don't you understand me now, baby? Please pull yourself together, do it soon. My soul's on fire, come on and take me. I'll be what you make me, my darling, my dear.
Oh, baby, you make me feel so good. Let me take you by the hand. Come, let us visit out there in that new promised land. Maybe there we can find a good place to use a loving state of mind. I'm so tired of being without and never knowing what love's about. James Moody, you can come on in, man, and you can blow now if you want to. We're through.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Raymond Matrulis. So Raymond, what has surprised you about your life?
That I'm still alive.
That's no small statement when you said some of the stuff you did about drugs and whatnot and just living at the edge, which I'm inferring.
For real.
Yeah.
I'm still alive and I still love my people.
And what do you mean?
I have people to love.
Right.
That I have people to love.
Right. So you're surprised that you still have people to love or that you still love your people?
Both.
Yeah. Yeah. What surprises you about having people to love at this point at 72 years of age?
I said it's what makes my whole life worthwhile, having a son and a daughter. My son doesn't want to hear it. He's the last Matrulis. I was the last Matrulis. This is an important thing. He's got to have three sons. My father had two brothers, and I still ended up being the last Matrulis. It's not cool. I tell my son over and over, people lived in holes in the ground to make me.
Right. And like
I told him, this is a funny story. He went to mustard seed school in Hoboken, which was a brilliant place. They were so Protestant, they didn't celebrate Halloween. Anyway, they had a baccalaureate dinner when the boy graduated in the eighth grade. And my ex and I went. They had us write down wishes for our offspring in the future. And they read the wishes. So they read my wish for Ajax, Raymond Ajax Matrulis. They read my wish for him, and they said that he would be Pope or have three sons. And I stood up and I said, no. I said, I want him to be Pope and have three sons. They killed. It killed. It killed. It killed. My boy.
Yeah.
But he's in no rush.
And that's his
fiance is a psychiatric nurse. I'm not sure I want the mother of my grandchildren to be a psychiatric nurse. But
I'm pretty sure you don't have a lot of say in that.
No, for real. She, you know, I can't influence him, and she's above him. So forget it.
So what does love mean to you now that you're 72 and that you're surprised to both have people to love and to love?
It means stuff that people can't afford. It's something that people cannot avoid, and I will not allow them to avoid it.
You're going to let them
I
know.
Still talk to my sister. My sister and I have different values. That's how I explain it. Uh-huh. But she, you know, we're half Italian, so you can talk to people you hate.
Actually, the people you love and the people you hate are the same people.
Yeah, tell my ex-wife about it. She hates me. I have no idea what I did. And it's 20 years later and she still hates me. What did I do? That's not right. American women. Nah.
Well, nah. Painting with a broad brush here, but,
that's for sure.
Let's go to your next piece of music. And then I'm going to go with my closing question. So what do we play next now?
Play, Blue Moon. Blue Moon by Betty Roche. You got that?
Betty Roche, I got it, and we're going to play it.
Oh, man, it's so bright. It's bright. Okay, good.
Okay.
Blue Moon, you saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart. Without a love of my own. Blue Moon, you knew just what I was there for. You heard me saying a prayer for someone I really could care for. And then suddenly there appeared before me the only one my arms could ever hold. I heard you whisper, please adore me. I looked, the moon had turned to gold. Blue moon, blue moon, now I'm no longer alone. Without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own.
This is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Raymond Matrulis. So Raymond, how do you take care of yourself now that you've surprisingly lived to the age of 72? What do you do to take care of yourself physically, emotionally, intellectually? How do you know you want to do it?
Let's stick with the physically, 'cause when I was divorced in 2000, everything else was stunted. But I decided in New Haven when I was like 24 that I didn't know what I was going to eat that day or if I was going to eat. And so, because we used to go fishing, fresh water, we drink wine, and salt water, we drink beer. And glorious times. Anyway, I didn't know what I was going to eat, so I made sure I had a yogurt every morning or when I woke up in the afternoon to prepare my stomach for what was to come during the day or not. So every day I have a little tiny, that one of those, they get smaller and smaller, one of those cups of yogurt every day. But after about 20 years, someone told me that the sugar in the fruit destroys all the destroys all the probiotics, but it hasn't stopped me. Anyway, I have I've really lost interest in food or eating here in Ithaca, which mm-hmm. is definitely a problem. I've had like 6 steaks in 9 years and been to McDonald's 6 times, and that's, you know, maybe good, but I get Meals on Wheels now, which it, I have to say, Ithaca takes care of its own, and I'm appreciative. I'm grateful, and the food is good. But what are we talking about? Oh, taking care of myself.
Yeah.
Okay, so the pandemic was good for trillionaires and for me. I sat on $4,000 for a year, and finally decided to go to the dentist. And the dentist said, "I'm sorry, your bones have receded. The teeth are up, held in there by an eighth of an inch. They're all going to fall out. There's nothing we can do. Go home." So I saved a lot of money. I've still saved a lot of money. I'm thinking of moving to Philadelphia where I can play records in a corner Mexican restaurant. But I had to figure out what I was going to eat, at least since I moved here. So I would work when I was working, and I only eat once a day. And I figured, oh, that's right, I figured everything you eat is bad for you. So if you only eat once a day, it's got to be good for you because you're only eating once a day. So I think it might be proven right. So I go to Capital Corner because I got to call up and get delivered. And there's only like 3 places you can do that. So I call them up in Capital Corner, JJ's, or Casablanca. I give them a headache. And it's all overpriced. But I could get away with $11, $12 a night when I had no money at Capital Corner. Now it's like $15 a night. But I'll tell you this, my bad cholesterol was 270. And when I decided to eat, I could only afford to eat at the Chinese place, it went down to 170 because it wasn't all meat and there wasn't so much salt. Right. So I guess eat yogurt first, only eat once a day. The cheaper, the better. Chinese is good. And squeeze a lemon on whatever you eat,
right?
No matter what it is, unless it's ham.
And then squeeze a lime on it.
Ooh, oh, now you're talking. Oh, what a great idea. So, oh, that's a great idea.
So, Raymond, you talked about some friends you kind of lost contact with.
Also, don't do cocaine anymore. No, right. That's not a good idea. Stop doing cocaine.
Who have you seen?
And smoking pot is very good for equilibrium. And I've smoked pot every day for 50 years. And my doctor is not complaining. The only bad thing I have is arthritic psoriasis, which is not the worst thing in the world to have.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just it's like, what's the word? It's what's the word for makeup? It's
right.
It's just what you see. It's right. It starts with a C.
Don't judge a book by its cover.
Right.
Yeah. So,
It's cosmetic.
Cosmetic. One of us would come up with that word sooner or later. So,
well, that's the thing about loss of short-term memory.
Right.
It's only short-term. You remember, like, even if it's 3 minutes later, you remember. So what's the problem? But memory is the mother of poetry. Right. Memory is the mother of the muses. And I've foregone a lot of memory, although I'm finding that I remembered three times more than other people.
Than you thought you had.
I've forgotten so much, and it's still three times more than other people.
So what I want to ask you, though, what I want to go to next is that many of the relationships, the friendships you've had or the people you've known over the years, you're not in touch with them anymore. But you are in touch with your son and your daughter. And this is your 72nd birthday, Sunday. What is important about your spending the day with them?
We're going to go shooting. I stopped seeing my wife left me when in 2000, the boy was five. And after that, I saw him Saturday night and Sunday and on my vacation, which we went to Ithaca together. And we went to Ithaca 16 Augusts in a row, relatively August, July, September. Mm-hmm. 16 Augusts in a row. My son has seen at least 500 movies with his father. Because we at least saw one movie every weekend. Mm-hmm. That's 500 movies. And he said he saw more movies than anybody at Bard. That kind of balances out hating rich people.
Right.
What was the question?
And your daughter. And what's the connection on this special day with your daughter?
Oh, 16 years in a row. What we're going to do today. Mm-hmm. Oh, I never see my daughter. I've seen my son 2 weeks out of the last 9 years. He's 28 years old. I've seen his fiance, my ex-wife, and my daughter less than that.
So
and they don't seem
day.
To be very alarmed. It's not very alarming to them. But only my son is half Italian or a quarter Italian. And oh no, wait, his fiance is half Italian. But what were we talking about? Oh, my daughter. What did you want to know about her?
I wanted to know what is your special connection to do with them on your birthday on Sunday?
Oh, Saturday. Oh, okay. So 16 summers in a row, I came up with my son and a few with my daughter, and we went shooting. We went out to the crack barn pretty much most of the time with my friend who has seven Lugers. Mm-hmm. And he's got a 20 gauge shotgun, an M1 carbine, a 22 Winchester. And we just go and blast away. I have pictures of my son shooting a shotgun at 6 years old. Mm-hmm. If my father had taken me out to shoot guns when I was his age, I cannot speak. Okay. And my stepdaughter, my daughter, is the best shot of all of us. She has her birthday is the 12th and Annie Oakley's birthday is the 13th of August. And we are going to do that on Saturday. We're going to go out to my friend's new house further out than the crack barn and shoot off his guns. And then Saturday night, we're going to have a barbecue and I get to see some meat. And then Sunday, we're going to look at photographs. And then he has to drive away.
Yeah. Raymond, it's been good to get to know you. Thank you for being on the show. What would you like?
Thank
to
you
close?
For asking me, man.
What would you like to close? I know you want the full song played. What do you want to close the show with?
One moment. One, two, three, four. You've played four songs.
I played, just me count myself. One, two, three, four, yes.
Okay, play. I'm sorry, Lori. This is for you. My better years.
Thank you, Raymond.
last time.